This is Fred Velez. On behalf of all the Zilch staff and all of the Monkey fans around the world, we note the passing of a true 60s music legend, Paul Revere. Thank you, Paul, for all the music and smiles. We dedicate this episode to his legacy.
What number is this, Chip?
Episode 14, Coco Dolans and More.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
And welcome to Zilch. On today's episode, we have a very special visitor drop by the Zilch headquarters. Now I am joined by Jeff Hewlett.
How's it going?
Craig Cohen.
Hey, hey.
And Sarah Clark.
Hey, everybody.
And believe it or not, Coco Dolans, Mickey's sister, beamed aboard on the Zilch hotline. So this was pretty cool. It was quite a thrill. Craig, I know you recently saw Mickey and Coco. What can you tell us about that show real quick?
Yeah, it was great. It was back the end of July. They were in here in New Jersey, and they played a show. And I'll tell you, it was a lot of fun. Mickey's got a great band backing him, and It was a nice surprise to see Coco there. She really adds a lot to the show. I think background vocals they don't get a lot of credit. She really delivered in that department, and she even got to do some full-on duets with him as well. So it was a lot of fun, and Mickey's a great, great entertainer and a great storyteller.
And speaking of background vocals, Jeff, I know that you're really into when a song is being performed, that it be performed correctly. For example, if someone does a cover, you like it to be a certain way. I don't think people realize how important background vocals are.
My take on it is, if you're going to do a cover, you either are true to the original or you go, completely in your own direction and make it your own. I'm not one of those that likes somebody taking a sample and just using it. But if you're gonna stick with the original and try to just recreate it in your own little way, you're better off to try to emulate, at least in a way, any of the background vocals that would have been there in the original. And you could switch it up a little bit and maybe switch the sex of the background singer around. Or actually, I really like it when people do their own background vocals and record their own voice as a background vocal as well. Like Todd Rundgren does that a lot.
Right.
Really.
And Mickey did that on Remember. All the background vocals on Remember were Mickey. Mm-hmm.
One great thing about having Coco on stage is you're going to get the best. So today we got a message from a friend and listener of the show, Andrea Ritchie, who asked about the Monkees Handmade set, the Monkees' first album, Handmade Set Edition, that's coming out soon. And are you excited about this, Craig?
Oh, totally. This looks like a great set. And I know a lot of people were talking about how they were going to, put out a 3-disc version of this when they've already put out the deluxe edition. I don't remember the exact count, but a huge percentage of this set is stuff that's never been officially released before.
And we don't have time to run through it all right now, but the Handmade set comes with 3 CDs, or 100 tracks, 45 previously unreleased tracks, outtakes, rarities, demos, and more. Now, the reason that we're letting you folks know about this is because it becomes available November 11th, 2014. From my understanding, there's only 4,000 of these going to be made. So if you want it, you might want to get it.
Totally. And one of the neat things about this is I love when they do this with sets, is you've got sort of this snapshot of what was going on with the Monkees when this album was being, recorded and put together. But you've also got something very, very special, and that third disc is going to be the David Jones album, which is what? The album that Davey made before he was a Monkee.
Correct. And we're also getting some of Michael Blessing's singles as well. We're going to be getting the New Recruit, Journey with Michael Blessing, Until It's Time For You To Go, What Seems To Be The Trouble Officer, Who Do You Love, and Get Out Of My Life, Woman. And of course you get the original mono album and the original stereo album from David Jones. So you're not just getting just the Monkees, you're getting those as well. And of course it's all put together by Monkees historian Andrew Sandoval. So if you're interested in this, this is the one to get.
Yeah, and you're going to have to buy it directly from Rhino Records or a link on the Monkees website.
Yes, and we will put links in the show notes, of course. We'd also like to say congratulations to Davey Meredith and all the people over at the Monkeys Headquarters Facebook page as they celebrate their second anniversary. They've always been big supporters of the Zilch Show, and we thank you and we say congratulations to you all.
Oh, totally. Very cool.
Okay, the last bit, and we'll get this over real quick. The songs you will hear on today's broadcast, Blackbird from Mickey Dolenz' CD, or you can get the download on Amazon. It's called Mickey Dolenz Live at B.B. King's, and we're going to play Blackbird from that, which is a duet with him and Coco. We're also doing Different Drum from Mickey's DVD Live at the Arcadia, and White Rabbit from that as well. And you can get that from Mickey's eBay site. You can even get an autograph, so that's definitely cool and worth picking up. You get to see Rich Dart and Coco and everybody. It's just fantastic. And the last track is It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing from Coco Dolenz on Stage, which you can get on her Etsy site.
Wow, very cool.
And we will put links in the show notes, of course. All right, well, let's get on to Coco Dolenz.
Hi, this is Coco Dolenz, and you're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
We as Monkey fans have been blessed to be entertained by the four original Monkeys. There are other people who have been involved in the story. One of those people is on the Monkeys hotline with me right now, and ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to the lovely and talented Coco Dolenz.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me.
It's been a thrill to get in touch with you and to have you on the show. I cannot tell you, you've been on the list of people that we want on the show. Basically, outside of the four original guys, you're like number five. So you're like the fifth monkey. You know how they used to say the fifth Beatle?
Okay. I'm that old, huh?
But I'm pumped. Let's talk a little bit about you and when you first started singing and growing up in the Dolenz household.
Well, I started growing up in the Dolenz household when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was many, many moons ago. As far as singing, we just always sang. My mom, as you know, was a singer. My dad was a singer. And, boy, I don't remember a time when we weren't singing. Either around the house or in the car, or Mickey and I singing with his guitar. Probably started with Mickey, really, when he started doing all the Circus Boy personal appearances, and he would, you know, go and sing, and so I'd start singing with him. Not that I did the appearances with him. I was always kind of like in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
But started singing with him then, and of course he was singing the lead. So that's really where I learned to do harmonies, which I've continued to do, and just pick them out. If you hear crying in the background, it's my cat. She's for some reason wanting my attention. I'm on the phone.
That's okay. We are a pet-friendly show here. I mean, I'm
okay,
here.
Okay, good. It's my Miss Molly.
We are
so
cool.
Just always singing. You know, we were just always singing in the house.
This might sound like a strange question because you really know no other way, but what was it like to grow up in a show business family? You mentioned your mom being a singer and your dad sing, but he was also an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel different growing up, like, as a family? Did you, like, say, like, wow, mom and dad don't have to go to the office or the factory? Or...
Well, my mom really gave up her career, so to speak, when she got married and started having kids and stuff. She really didn't, you know, pursue it anymore. My dad was gone a lot, and then not. You know, he had a couple of TV shows and did movies and stuff. And and living in the Los Angeles area as well, it was just kind of this is what we do, you know. And then Mickey got the Circus Boys show, of course, and he was gone a lot. And my mother was on set with him, of course, because that's what you do when you're 9 years old. You have to have a guardian
mm-hmm.
on set with you. So. Even though I did a couple of the Circus Boy shows and one of the Count of Monte Cristo shows, it wasn't really my forte, so to speak, but it was just what we did. You know, I mean, I went to a school with Steve Allen's kid, you know, I went to, who else went? Gordon McRae's daughter, Heather.
Uh-huh.
And Gordon McRae was a, you know, show, did a lot of musicals and things at the time. And it was kind of like, oh, wow, look at that, you know, and we were all in kind of the same boat. You
right.
know, so So it was kind of like, you know, you grow up with a bunch of, if you're in a, if your family's in the medical field, you know, probably a lot of your friends, family, they're doctors, you know, oh, dad had to leave at 3 this morning kind of thing.
Right, or if you grow up in a factory town, chances are somebody works in a factory. If you grow up on a farm or in a rural farming community, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and not necessarily that you hung out with all those people, but you did know them, and because you were in the, quote, business, unquote, it wasn't that big of a deal, you know, but still, and it had its perks, though. I mean, my father had a restaurant on the Sunset Strip called the Marquee when we were growing up. He was doing, you know, television and movies and stuff, as well as having the Marquee, which I think was really his big love. And I remember getting a call one night and going, there's, you know, because all kinds of people would come into the restaurant, and he said, there's a... George Chakiris is here. Is that important to you? And I went, oh, my God. And, of course, he was in West Side Story, a brilliant actor. And I, of course, was falling all over myself. Oh, bring me a picture, you know. So we were still enamored by other entertainers. I was still a young girl and enamored by, you know, George Chakiris or the, you know, rock and roll stars and stuff. As far as being really young, Ken, it was just kind of like, oh, we're in the business. Like, I know one of the questions we had talked about is, you know, did we know that when the Monkees hit, you know, was it going to be such a big deal? It's like, as far as I knew, it was just going to be another show. Just, you know, Mickey got cast another show. Oh, cool, great, because we had moved up north. He stayed down there, was doing some gigs, had a rock and roll band, blah, 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 and got cast in this show, and we went, oh, cool.
Because at that point, he had been, like, on Peyton Place and other things. And
so, yeah, he was kind of, you know, kicking around, doing a little bit here, a little bit there, doing his music and whatever, you know, and went out and auditioned for the show, and he got it. So it's like, oh, my God, got another show. Very cool. You know, excellent. Had no idea it was going to, of course, be what it was. Nobody did.
Going back to your mom and your family harmonies and all that kind of thing, in your recent live shows the last few years, you and Mickey have been doing Bye Bye Black. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why that means so much to you guys?
Well, the cover story, as Mickey says, the cover story is that my mother taught that to us as kids, because when we grow up, things that influenced us were quite a variety of things. Okay, I was influenced personally by theater songs, Oklahoma, South Pacific. I knew every song in South Pacific. It was a movie at the time, okay? I knew every song, and I would perform them for the family and all that. And Oklahoma, knew them all. Like I said, and then years later, of course, went to school with Gordon McRae's daughters. I was like, oh, yeah, I always wanted to be the, you know, in Oklahoma. So musical theater and musicals, musicals of the 40s, because my mom had sang with big bands, and she loved the music of the 40s, so that was always around the house. Anytime there were movies on with Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, all those people, it was like everyone sits down and watches it. So I loved all those songs, right? And then opera, of course, because my father sang light opera, so I was very influenced by that as far as classical and gorgeous voices and things. Then, of course, later on, folk and blues, female R&B, female black artists were my favorite. And then, you know, and then, of course, rock and roll. Whoops, phone just fell down. Sorry about that. But Blackbird, so we started, you know, Mickey and I, when we do our solo show, he likes us to kind of go through a musical, you know, genres. But Bye Bye Blackbird, actually, the true story is that, and just we'll just keep this between ourselves and everybody else who listens to this. When the family moved up to Los Gatos, it was right about the time the show was breaking, and Mickey was, he and I were driving up to Los Gatos during the move. He was staying down in Los Angeles, and the rest of the family's moving up, because I was just like, you know, 15 or 16 at the time, something like that. And so, again, we're singing in the car, and we came up with that arrangement, driving along the Pacific Coast Highway, and it's just always stuck. We had nothing else to do but just sing and make up songs, and why we picked that one, I have no idea.
Well, let's play a little bit of that right now.
Oh, my God.
Pack up all my cares and woes, here I go, singing low, bye, bye, Blackbird. number.
Oh, it gets better.
Where somebody waits for me. Sugar sweet, so is she. Bye, bye, blackbird. No one there to love or understand me. Oh, what harlot stories they all hand me. Make my bed like the light. I'll arrive late tonight. Blackbird, bye-bye. One, two, one, two, three, four, pack up all my cares and woes. Here I go singing low, bye-bye, blackbird. Where somebody waits for me, sugar sweet, so is she. Bye-bye, blackbird. No one there to love or understand me. Oh, what are the stories they all have me? Make my bed light, light. I'll arrive a little late tonight. Blackbird, bye-bye.
Blackbird.
Oh, blackbird.
Blackbird.
Black, blackbird.
Blackbird. Bye-bye. 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 Little blackbird, bye.
Your name is Gemma Marie Dolenz, and we know that Mickey's name is George Michael Dolenz, and I noticed a similarity between the names, the GMD.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, you know, how families will do that? Was that something that your parents, when they picked that name, intentionally did that?
I have no idea. I suppose they did. You know, George is my father's name, of course, and Gemma was my father's mother's name.
Ah.
And Michael, I don't know where they got that. Marie was my mother's name, Marie Janelle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but we do have the same initials.
How much of an age difference is there between you and Mickey?
4 years.
4 years. I remember reading in Mickey's book where he kind of picked on you a lot, but anytime somebody would pick on you, he'd like, hey, you know, he'd do that big brother thing.
I think that's typical family, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, brothers and sisters pick on each other, but anybody outside the family, no, I don't think so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, let's go to the Monkees TV show is on, and the albums are coming out, and your friends are starting to pick up on the fact that that's your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of different, or again, was it because it was showbiz people, or that they kind of accepted it, or?
Well, the people that I knew in L.A. Remember, we moved up to the Bay Area. The family moved up to the Bay Area during that time. So my friends back in L.A., it was like, oh, Mickey's got a show, and a lot of my friends were in the business and sales and stuff. So it's no big deal. It was like, oh, who, you know? But I had moved up to this little town in Northern California, where people were still being late to school because they had to milk the cows, you know.
Absolutely.
And I was really odd man out. I just come from Los Angeles, you know. And even though I wasn't an L.A. chick, they, you know, I was an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the show, when did the show air, 1966, September?
Yes.
Right? Well, I graduated from high school in June of 66. So I had already graduated from high school. I'd spent my last couple of years, you know, last year in school there. So I didn't have a lot of friends yet up there. But the people that I did know, of course, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very careful about who my friends were, because I found that even in Los Angeles, you know, when you are the sibling of a famous person, you learn the hard way as to who's your friend and who just wants to get close to your sibling.
Right.
And I'm sure if I was to write a book and talk to a lot of other people that, you know, were close and had siblings in the business, they would probably say the same thing. You know, there are a lot of fair-weather friends, you know, acquaintances.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know really who your true friends are. So it was hard, you know. In some cases it was fun and it was great. When they came up and did the concert in San Francisco, it was like mind-boggling. But also, you know, people treat you differently. And to this day, when I meet people and they just know me as Gemma because that is my real name. And so, they, you know, either as Gemma or Coco, which is a nickname. And they just know me as me, you know, and they, you know, we're friends or, you know, whatever. And as soon as they find out who my family is, they see me in a different light, and they will treat me differently. And all of a sudden, they are just different. I haven't changed, but they see me differently, and they treat me differently. It's weird.
We were speaking to Christian Nesmith recently.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that he would be talking to people that he'd meet in a nightclub or a concert venue or something, mm-hmm. and they would find out that as soon as they found out that the guy with the wool hat was his dad, it's like mm-hmm. he stopped being a person.
Exactly.
Like, they just looked at him completely different.
Exactly. I'm sure I've done the same thing when I've met people that were relatives of very, very famous people. It's really hard. It's just a human condition, I think. You know?
Yeah. Plus, we're conditioned by the media that those
sure.
people are special and we're not.
Yeah. Exactly.
What was the first time that you visited the set like? Because you had on Circus Boy and
yeah.
a few things like that. But now you're an adult, basically, and you're mm-hmm. seeing inside the business. What was it like to see your brother, that guy that you saw loafing around the house,
mm-hmm.
that would irritate you when he'd make a sandwich or do something weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden he's Mickey Dolenz.
Well, you know, it started with Circus Boy, though, Ken, you
yeah.
know, because he was the star of Circus Boy, too. And even though I was younger, it was still all about him,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I was on the set of Circus Boy not only as just visiting, but as an actress. And again, it was just like, this is, you know, lights, cameras, action. Here we go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do a scene, and then we'd go, you know, romp off with the chimp somewhere and, you know, watch the chimp act like a human being and drink water from the fountain. And it was just all kind of just fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at that young age, even, I realized that it's a profession, that it's a business. And one of the things I remember, I was just, because it just came in my head, was all this technology. You know, they're outside at wherever they were, Corrigan Ranch or something, at Circus Boy. And it happened with the monkey thing, too. You're outside and you got all these lights and cameras and this and that, and the sun gets blocked by the clouds. And the whole world stops.
Yeah.
And it just, even as a small child, I thought, you guys think you're so great, you know? You got all this equipment, and sun gets blocked, and I go, whoops, gotta wait, you know? And they can't do anything. It just always tickled me that that would happen. But it happened on the monkey set as well, you know, that you're there, and it depends on nature. You know, starts to rain, you're in deep trouble. But I think, again, because of the monkey thing, because my dad, I'd been on set with my dad, it was just another TV set. I knew the protocol, you know, quiet when the bell goes off, you
mm-hmm.
know, don't trip over anything. God forbid you touch anything because it's all unionized, you know. And I didn't see it as that, oh, my God, it's Mickey. No, it's Mickey doing another show,
mm-hmm.
you know. I didn't have the same... like you said, Mickey Dolenz, Mickey had another show. And good for him, you know. And it wasn't me, poo-poo head, you know.
Yeah.
Because we didn't see it from their perspective, or from the fans' perspective, unless you went to one of the concerts, which that, of course, brings up another point, is like, concerts? How could they do concerts if they didn't play their own instruments? I guess nobody ever figured that one out.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mickey had done some previous singles before that
mm-hmm.
later were released. So he was kind of like going down the musical path as much as he could. And he
mm-hmm.
then he gets picked up for this show. And now he's got to do this concert. Did you have any
mm-hmm.
doubt that he could pull this off? Or
mm-hmm.
now he's got to go out in front of 12,000 people, 9,000 people, whatever the number is, and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. No, it never occurred to me. Because he's an entertainer, and he always has been.
Mm-hmm.
And as kids, we'd, you know, take the guitar down to Malibu Beach and sing for everybody, and
mm-hmm.
he's always been able to turn it on, so to speak. He was cast as a drummer for the show, as we all know, and he didn't play drums, but he's always been very musical. We all have, you know. We all play piano, a little bit of guitar. He played really good guitar. And he learned the drums, basically, for the part, and had lessons and everything. And no, it never occurred to me that he wouldn't be able to do that, because whether it's two people or 12,000, you're still, you know, a professional just as Mickey is and still is, you dive yourself into the part. If you're singing, if you're acting, whatever you're doing, that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking about the 12,000 people. You're doing what you're doing on stage, and that's what consumes you.
Excellent point. So you were on the set with the other monkeys and Mickey, of course, and you going through that whole process. What did you think of the other guys?
They were really funny. The chemistry between the four, I must say, with everything else that went down, the choice that Bob and Bert made, Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider made in the four guys, I think was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, the cast of Friends or the cast of Cheers, you know, casting is a huge thing because chemistry is huge.
Yes.
You know, they've tried to recreate certain shows with other people, and it just hasn't happened. So the chemistry between those four guys, I thought, was brilliant. I think each one's character was so well-defined that there wasn't just four kind of mishmash people. I mean, they were well-defined, and they played off of each other really well. It was fun. It was spontaneous. Mickey and David, of course, having the most theatrical experience and background. Being on the set, if you've ever been on a set, there's a lot of waiting around.
Yes.
You know, it takes a long time. You know, when you see a show, you think, oh, it goes bam, 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 bam. Well, for that 10-second shot, you know, or 5-second shot, it takes setting up and mm-hmm. lights and around, you know. So yeah. There's a lot of waiting around, and the fact that they were able to wait around and all of a sudden be, okay, Mickey, we need you on the set, and bam, you got to turn it on. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's where the professionalism comes in, you know, to be able to read your lines or whatever. You know, I love the fact that the monkey tour that we've done the last couple of years, they had clips from the show and a lot of outtakes.
Yes.
Which just shows, you know, how they would go to realign and then just bust themselves up. Mm-hmm. And then they'd have to do it again and again. And that's a lot of what it was, you know. But as they went on, you know, it became even more and more professional. But a lot of the stuff was just ad-libbing and a lot of fun. And they had a lot of fun, and they worked off of each other really well.
In your recent shows with Mickey, you've mm-hmm. been doing Mike's different drum.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what you like about that song and what led you to do it?
Well, first of all, I love Mike's work. And Mickey was looking for solo songs for me to do in the show. When we had done some things earlier on in the 1990s, and 2000s, we were doing things like Runaway and Route 66 and things like this. And he wanted the show to be more indicative of, like I said, the 60s and mm-hmm. more of a theme. It's like, why are we just doing these songs just because you sing them well? So I always liked Different Drum, and the fact that Mike wrote it and Linda Ronstadt had done it, it just made sense for us to cover it because it was a Mike Nesmith song. So that's basically why we put it into the show. It was a female singer. The lovely story is that, of course, Mike wrote it, and Mickey then, of course, explained that Mike had brought it to the producers, and they said, no, it's not a monkey song. And so Linda Ronstadt did it, and it was a huge hit. And so I started doing it just as a representation of Mike Nesmith's music in our show, representing the 60s as well.
Well, I'd like folks to listen to some of that right now, your excellent version of Different Drum.
There was one guy that I think wrote some of the best songs we ever did, and his name was Mr. Mike Nesmith. But funnily enough, one of the best songs I think he ever wrote, he did not write for the Monkees, or rather, he actually did submit it for the early Monkee records, and they turned it down. This was before we had any control over what we were going to be recording. And he submitted this song to the producers and the record company, and they said, nah, 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 that's not a monkey tune. You know? So he said, oh, okay. And he went and he gave it to somebody else. I want Coco to sing this song for you. He gave this song to a young girl singer kicking around Los Angeles at the time. She made a huge hit out of it. Coco's gonna do Linda Ronstadt and the Stone Ponies, Different Drum.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Thank you, Nick.
Now you know where I learned to sing, and I'm older.
That was absolutely lovely. I love what you did with it. It's fantastic. True to the original, but yet you made it your own. It's very special. So,
thank you. Great song.
How did you make the transition from being on the set to going into the recording studio with the Monkees?
Well, when I was down there visiting, of course, I'd stay at Mickey's house because our family doesn't live there anymore. And if I was down there for a couple of days or however long, I would just go wherever he was. And one of the things that I have to say about those times was that they worked their asses off. If I can say asses on your show.
Yes.
They were paid very little, and they worked their asses off. I mean, they literally were there at crack of dawn to way after the sun went down, and then they'd have to go into the studio to record, you know, the songs. So I would just, you know, go with them. And I was down there for the Last Train to Clarksville promo they did at the very beginning. And literally, we were on a train and went all the way down to San Diego and back. And now I live in San Diego, which is kind of a trip because, you know, full circle. And I remember Tommy Boyce always saying, oh, God, if, you know, Mickey ever gets hoarse, we'll just have Coco record his solos because we sounded so much alike.
Well, it is uncanny that you do sound so much like him. And I could see where they would have you doing backing vocals on another guy's track to have the illusion that Mickey's there while he could be in another studio. I could see how they could pull that off quite easily.
Yeah, our voices are very similar, even more so then than now because of, you know, just age. But absolutely, absolutely. In fact, there are people asking, well, did you sing on such and such? And, you know, quite honestly, I don't remember. I know I was there for D.W. Washburn. I know I did Shorty Blackwell a couple of years. But we sang so many of these songs just sitting around the house and singing and stuff. And it was so long ago also. And I was in and out in different sessions, and some of them I was singing. I don't really remember all the ones that I actually sang on, because when I was there and there was a part to do a harmony, I would do it.
You just
hop in. And then other times I wouldn't.
Yeah. We could talk all day about work that you did in the studio, but there's one track that one of our hosts, Craig Smith, has a love for, and that's Shorty Blackwell. And one time he met your brother, and he said, Mickey was recording a new album. He said, I heard you're recording a new album. Are you going to have anything as good as Shorty Blackwell? And Mickey just kind of turned away from him.
Like,
wow. Don't bring that up. And then later, at the convention, he had Mickey sign a drum head for him, and he had him write Shorty Blackwell. And by that point, Mickey had... must have embraced it again, because he said, that's a good pick. And when he signed it, so it's just funny how time can change a song.
I don't know why he had that feeling about that.
Well, I think that it was such a weird song. I mean, I, as a Monkees fan, there's so many different versions of it that are now released from Rhino, and it's just amazing. It just seemed like he was obsessed by that song for the longest time.
Well, I remember the one version that I remember so much was that it was quite an orchestration.
Yes.
You know, and that was probably, I mean, we were all influenced by the Beatles and all the work that George Martin did, you know. I remember one of the, well, the one that I remember was, you know, quite a symphony, you know. It had movements in it and this and that. And I don't know, I'll have to ask him, because I really don't remember. But it was certainly different than your regular rock and roll. But you have to remember, you know, the songs were created for them at the very beginning, so that Monkey sound was set by Donnie Kirshner and everybody, and then they all got to finally express themselves musically, and that's when you started hearing all these other things coming out of them, which were there all the time, you know.
Well, it seemed like Mike was a natural fit for that. Like, he already
had
Mike
his... Yeah, Mike was writing all along, yeah.
And Peters was trying to figure out that process, as was Mickey, and Davey kind of would find a co-writer and, you know, go along that way. But Mickey, it seemed like he was kind of lost a little bit trying to find his vision on these things. And it's amazing to hear all the different versions of Shorty Blackwell. And you either love that song or you hate that song. It just seems like it's such a strong reaction with people. And I guess, what's your thoughts on Shorty Blackwell?
I just had fun singing it. You know, it was about his cats, and it was about static electricity with a balloon following you around, and it was a lot of fun. And I guess we didn't really make a lot of, you know, didn't think about it. It was experimentation. Mickey's more the scientist and the experimenter, and hey, let's try this, let's try that, you know. That's who he is, you know. So I don't think there was any great thought behind anything except let's try this, let's try that. I mean, he was the first one to have a Moog synthesizer, you know. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
You know, and Mike was a country western singer, and Peter was, you know, from Greenwich Village doing folk tunes, and Davey, you know,
show
was
tunes.
A Broadway song and dance man. So, yeah. You know.
When the Monkees fell apart, was it hard to see your brother go through all that?
I think the way that it was handled and the way that they were treated as so much meat on a hook, you know, and mm-hmm. just kind of tossed away, thrown away, that was hard. But Mickey being the resilient, you know, professional that he is, I mean, he just kind of, you know, reinvented himself so many times, went to England and produced plays and directed plays mm-hmm. and
started
television
a family.
Shows. And, yeah, I mean, he's in rehearsal for a show right now in Connecticut, you know.
Yes.
He's written books. He's a professional entertainer, and he has just gone on to do what he does.
Well, that's one of the things I've always admired about him and the other guys, is that this story could have ended in, like, 1969 or 1970. It just could have all ended for all of them. But mm-hmm. the type of people that they are, I don't know if they ever said, well, let's prove everybody wrong, but they did.
Well, they were four talented people
mm-hmm.
That had been thrown together, and like they say, you know, talent will out, kind
yes.
of thing. And because of their notoriety and because they were so well known, you know, some of them were able to leverage that and use that to carry on. Of course, Mickey, when he was funny, in Hollywood, you know, the joke is if Jesus, and I don't mean this sacrilegious at all, but they say if Jesus showed up, they'd say, yeah, so what have you done lately?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know? You know, and Hollywood is just brutal that way. It's like, well, do you have a show now? You know, kind of a thing. So you always have to reinvent yourself, you know. Marketing yourself, and not only that, but the classic thing is, of course, the original Superman,
mm-hmm.
Who basically killed himself because in the 50s, after he finished Superman, the original Mr. Reeve killed himself because they would not hire him to do anything else because the public saw him as Superman,
right.
and there was no way that they were going to embrace him in any other, you know, kind of happened to these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens to those people, you know, that are on television and stuff. So, yeah, they've had to reinvent themselves many times. I'd like to work with the guy that produced Mickey's Remember album.
That album actually. Is amazing.
Oh.
God, that album is amazing.
Oh. David Harris, unbelievable. And that we don't do more of those songs on the
it's
solo
sad.
Show just breaks my heart. We're finally doing Sugar Sugar, thank God.
Right. But it's sad. This speaks to every band and every artist and everyone that has, you know, the new albums are getting left in the dust. But as yeah. much as we could hear Mickey sing Oh Darling, which is a song that he absolutely loves, I'd mm-hmm. rather hear something off of Remember that is new.
I would too.
You know, but so Mickey, we're telling you right now.
The thing is like he says, you know, he is very well aware that people come to hear him sing Monkey songs.
Oh, absolutely.
Sugar Sugar, we're getting a very huge response because he tells the story.
Right.
He doesn't want to just cover stuff, and he doesn't want to just throw something in there to sing it because it's like a song. It's got to have a background. It's got to have mm-hmm. backstory to it, you know.
Yeah.
Why am I doing? Why do we do Johnny B. Goode, because it was his audition piece for the Monkees, you know.
I wish he'd do a follow-up to that album.
Oh, me too. And I'd like to be on.
Well, Mickey, get on it.
I know.
This is a compliment to your brother. And we did a whole episode about just that album.
Remember, oh. Okay.
But the thing about that album is for an artist of his age, and I don't mean by his physical age, but when someone starts in the 60s, most, as much as I love Paul McCartney, most of his best work is back there.
Mm.
Mickey still has it. And
I agree.
He has not lost his voices. And when you think about voices in rock, there's very few voices in rock and roll that still sound as good as they did. And Mickey is pretty much where he was back then. And you're not so bad yourself either, Cupcakes.
Yeah. Well, we learned how to sing properly. And he really learned how to sing properly, even more so when he started doing all these plays.
Mm-hmm.
Being my background of singing was always, you know, with a mic in front of a, you know, a church audience or at a concert, you know, at a gathering or something, or just singing with a solo piano. And that's a different kind of singing than when you're screaming on stage rock and roll.
Yeah.
Or doing theater. See, I was doing theater, too. And you have to learn how to sing and place your voice, otherwise you're going to become hoarse and ruin it, you know. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And there, again, is that experimentation thing. You know, he's willing to go, okay, fine, let's try this, you know. So, thank you. I agree about that with him, and I hope he continues to experiment and do other stuff. We'll just have to see.
Over the last few years, the Monkees have had a new life, a new resurgence, and you've been a big part of that, from everything from the Monkees conventions to Mickey's solo shows and his DVD and things like Live at the B.B. King's and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the concert stage. And we recently spoke to Rich Dart, who gave us a breakdown of everybody on the stage. Mm-hmm. And he said that you are an absolute delight and a lovely woman.
Aw, I pay him to say that. Well, it's a mutual admiration society with Rich, because he is a delight. He is always so up and so jovial and an incredible percussionist.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say just drummer. He's a percussionist, because he's just so tasty and so much fun to be with. And I think the A-Team, I mean, we really have Mickey's put together an incredible band. Wonderful.
Absolutely.
To work with.
And Christian and Cersei were on the show.
Yes, absolutely. And what a wonderful addition that was, like a family affair.
And I love it when you, Cersei, and Mickey are doing the background for Doors into Summer. I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah.
So,
that was fun.
Are you enjoying the Monkees tours and the Mickey shows?
Absolutely. Well, especially with Mickey. You know, I've been working with him, well, on and off all my life, but, you know, I first went out with Mickey and David, you know, at the end of the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and we toured all over the place, and David had put together that show quite extensively, and that was a lot of fun. Then, of course, I started working with Mickey. He invited me to come do solo shows with him in, I guess it was 2000, 1999, 2000, somewhere in there. And I've done all his solo shows since then. Now, haven't been a part of when he was doing the Teen Idol tours. Did a couple of those. You know, those not really, because it just doesn't merit it. But anytime it's just his show, I do it with him. And that's just a dream come true, you know, being able to work with him like that, because we have such a great chemistry and have such a good time. So that's just been wonderful. And then the Monkey thing, I'm basically background vocals, you know. My little ear pack says BGV, background vocals. So I take a little bit of a back seat, you know. That's just what you do. I mean, we've...
Yes, but if it weren't for your back seat, if you will, the show would not sound as good as it does.
Oh, thanks.
As a matter of fact, speaking of something that sounds really good, here's your take on White Rabbit.
Coco, come out here and sing another song. I gotta go back and have a lobotomy. Well, I do a little something on honor of Miss Gracie Slick. Chasing rabbits and
you know you're going to fall. Tell them a hookah smoking caterpillar has given you the call to call Alice when she was just small. And when the men are on the chessboard, get up and tell you where to go, and you just have some kind of mushroom, and your mind is moving low.
Hi, it's Annabelle Jones. Help us carry on our father's legacy by becoming a member of the DJMF today and caring for the horses that he loved so dearly. So you can learn more about the DJMF at www.djemf.com. If you want to learn more about Written in Our Hearts, you can visit them on Facebook. And if you'd like to purchase the book, it's available on Amazon.
To help take care of Davy Jones's herd, and to find out more information on the Davy Jones Equine Memorial Foundation, go to www.djemf.com.
So it seems like the monkeys conventions have been a bit of a love fest and family reunion for everybody. Everybody gets to bring their kids around, and it must give you all a great bit of satisfaction after the monkeys were kind of chewed up and spit out, and you know, that you kind of got to see all that happen, and now you're seeing the tribe come together, if you will. The fans are just loving you guys, and like I'm saying, like, you're one of the monkeys as far as I'm concerned, by as much as many of the albums that you've been on. You've just been a huge bit of the monkeys' history that it's impossible to think of it without you.
Well, it has been a huge part of my life, that's for sure. As far as the monkey conventions and just the fans, I just look at it as, you know, when there's talent, when there's something that's good, I mean, it doesn't die. I mean, I still watch Casablanca. I still watch The African Queen, the movies, you know. I still listen to my Beatle records and my James Taylor albums, you know. Mm-hmm. When something's good and it's something that brings you joy, it doesn't get old,
right.
You know. It doesn't really get old. And what also thrills me is that when we do live concerts, whether it be monkeys or just Mickey and I, the demographics, the, you know, people that are older than us, and then they bring their grandkids, and everybody's enjoying the music because it's good music and we're having a good time, that just blows me away. And I remember looking out in the faces of the fans and all the people that I know, many of them now, because of the conventions, which is kind of cool, because now they're just not nameless faces. You know, they're people I actually know by name and know what they do and who they are, with tears in their eyes, you know, singing songs, bringing joy. And see, my life has been a whole different thing. Other than the monkey thing, I've had a life other than that too. And my life has been in raising consciousness and bringing joy and turning people on to inspiration and life and joy and happiness and love and, you know, bringing that whole thing up. And when I see people turned on and just laughing and smiling, I know that heals the planet as well. And I don't care if it's singing a monkey song or they're in an ashram somewhere, it's raising the consciousness. And that's where I get my joy.
I love that. Now let's talk about your music. Is there anything you'd like to point people to? I know that you have your Etsy site and you do a lot of very creative things. I'd like to turn some people on to what you're doing.
Yeah, my Etsy site is kind of a craft thing. It's kind of fun. My focus has usually been recording songs that I did at conscious raising events, songs that expanded consciousness, that were about love, about being courageous, about being inspirational. And those are really the ones that I've recorded. And then I did a one-woman show called Songs on My Music Stand.
Yes.
And again, that was also kind of like a walk through my history, and some jazz songs. Well, I love jazz.
Do I? It don't mean a thing. All you got to do is sing.
Do I?
Now it makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. Just give that rhythm everything you've got. Oh, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Do I?
Picking fascinating rhythm, I won't just stop picking up.
Thank you. You know, I want people to feel good. I want people to be able to listen to something and feel a little bit better, feel a little bit happier, feel a little bit more inspired. Okay, so that's usually the kind of songs that I will record, and I'd love to do another one. You know, so if you know anyone who wants to produce an album, let me know. You know, I've got a website, cocodolan.com, and I do some writing on that site. Been doing some webinars. I did one with Nikki a couple months ago on show business, and I'm really looking forward to doing some more of those and having some conversations with people on the webinars about things of import. You know, just and topics of import, and we haven't really decided where that's going to go yet, but that is something that's on the back burner. Doing some more writing, my art, of course, and this weekend I'm doing a horse blessing, of all things, a ceremonial horse blessing of land and horses for horses that are being used in a healing program, a therapeutic healing program here in the San Diego area. That's kind of exciting. Also putting together a woman singing group here in San Diego for women that just want to sing and have fun singing, and also looking to put together a workshop called Finding Your Voice. A friend of mine that is also doing this horse therapeutic healing, we want to put together some workshops for women that want to become a little bit more empowered, find their voice, meaning find who they really are and express themselves, you know. That's kind of in the works, so I don't know, just lots of things. I've got a lot of books and recordings of my stepfather. He was a minister and a metaphysical minister, and I've been working on getting them from cassette tape into MP3 files, and I want to make those available. Very, very inspiring works, and add some music to them and turn them into little YouTube things or something, you know. So lots of fingers and lots of pies, as it were.
Very good. Well, anything you want to let folks know about, Zilch is here for you. And
thanks.
We'd love to have you come back on the show at any time you want to. And please tell your brother, we wouldn't mind him stopping by sometime either.
Okay.
But like I said, anything you want to promote, anything you ever want to let people know, we are a platform for you. We are a vehicle for you.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate the work you're doing, too. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. That means a lot. I needed to hear that today.
Oh, Oh, yeah. I was checking out the site, of course, when you first approached me, and I of course, clicked on the link and saw what you're doing. It's like, oh, wow, that is so cool. So good for you. You know, it's like we just have to do what we can do to spread the joy and spread the love, you know?
And I'm all
There's
for...
too much stuff going on in the world that's the opposite.
Absolutely. And I am totally all for making a few more smiles. So in the spirit of this conversation today, we ask that everybody who's listening today do something nice for someone. Smile when you see someone. And just let somebody know how you feel about them. So... It's not
great
a bad
idea,
thing.
Kim.
Not a bad
great
thing.
Idea.
As a matter of fact, you mentioned the faces in the crowd. One of those faces in the crowd, you recently were performing in New Jersey in July 28th, was Mr. Craig Cohen. Do you remember him at all?
The good-looking guy.
Yes, yes, that's him.
Oh, my God, Craig, yes.
A powerful and attractive man, so.
Absolutely, and he had a great time.
Yes, he did. Well, he was at a Mickey show, so.
There you go. There you go.
He's going to trip when he hears this.
Cool.
Well, thank you, Coco.
You are welcome, and thank you, and good luck, and we'll talk again.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps up another Laugh Riot. And this is Mike Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz,
and Peter Tom,
and Davy Jones,
and Mickey Dolenz, reminding you to save the Texas prairie chicken.
Boom, boom. Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Okay, well, I guess it's time to wrap it up, so...
Bye. Zilch.
Take some time to monkey around. Here we go. Walking down, the,
down
street.
The street.
We get the funniest looks from.
Looks from.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the monkeys or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burr. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
And I should warn you that we have a guard chihuahua here who thinks she runs the house.
Ah, okay.
So if, like, the garbage man comes or the postman comes, she will let her presence
let you know.
Be known.
She's
a diva. Well, but I'm pumped.
Okay.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
I'm Fred Velez. My new book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkeys from a Fan's Perspective, chronicles my experiences with the Monkees from the 1960s into today, along with stories by other fans and how the Monkees touched our lives. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective by Fred Velez, available on Amazon.com, CreateSpace.com, Smashwords.com, Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble Nook, and other print and ebook outlets.